Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hum. Shot puts that one to Christensen, incomplete. And Hum is down and writhing again as Jim Osborne got him.
He is hurt.
Ray Guy, the punter, is the emergency quarterback.
Big salaries for quarterbacks. This is one of the reasons they can command them. They're trying to block in there. Kenny King had a shot at Osborne, couldn't get to him. Looks like he may have caught a helmet up underneath his chin on that play. They're going to keep him down momentarily. Their defense just attacking there. You see the red stripe under the chin of their...
That was from the time before. Remember, they were looking in his mouth.
Yeah, well.
Ray Guy, we were checking there. Of course, Guy, the veteran of now 12 years in the league, he has thrown three passes, but those well could be three that he's thrown from punt formation. I don't think they've ever had to use him in this situation, although he's been ready for it.
He runs the scout defense. In other words, this last week, he was in playing quarterback, running the Bears offense against the Raider defense. And you got to believe that one man on that sideline wishes he were in uniform today. Plunkett's a tough competitor, and pull stomach muscle, he would much rather go out, even with his injury, than to have to send Ray Guy out there. That's, you know, if I were Ray Guy, maybe I'd say, are you sure you really want me to do this?
Well, Guy, who has a great arm, there's no question about that, as Hum has helped off the field. The second Raider quarterback to leave with injuries. Wilson went out twice, once with a back injury, once with a injured thumb, and now Hum. He went out once after a whack. You saw the bruise on the chin, and they were checking his teeth, and now hard to tell where that's the knee. I think that's a if they put him on, you know, they list the injuries of athletes, that might be you start at the top of the head and go down to the feet and just say anatomy. I mean,
welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember that this, what is it? Remember this crap.
that crap.
Remember some crap. And Mike Donahue is here to remember crap about the history of the Bears and the Oakland, Las Vegas Raiders.
Raiders.
Did we miss anybody? Any towns there? Barstow? Did they ever play in
Bakersfield?
I heard something that I was going to look this up to see if he even got one more, but apparently the last four times the Bears have played the Raiders where they were the road team, it's been in four different, well, this will be the fourth different place.
Really?
I think that's right. No, that's okay. Not right. I guess the last four times they've played in a different city. That's what it was. It's Oakland, Chicago, London, Las Vegas. And I was going to look to see if the time before that, maybe, because they don't play that often, that maybe it was in L.A., but I doubt that.
Every 4 years, and then before 2001, it would have been every 3 years, which, unlike the Bengals and Browns, they kind of held to that. They seemed to I looked it up. They actually did play a few times in the 70s, but they pretty much played every, even when the Bears were coming in last place, when the number came up, they always played the Raiders and too. So there's quite a few games between those two teams, and we're going to cover a few of them, I'm sure.
What would you give for Vag McCaskey to come out? Because I'm sure she's going to Vegas. She's not missing a trip to Vegas.
Hell no. Got to go.
Come out
go
before
down.
Kickoff with the Mark Davis haircut. Just to fire the guys up.
Where are the $2 blackjack tables?
Ed and I used to go to Circus Circus.
No, is Binion still here? Yeah. Well, I haven't been to Vegas in years. I've been there quite a bit in the late 90s, early aughts. And I know the Strip is basically not what it was. But downtown, I think, was where you could still get a $2 steak dinner and, you know, find those $2 tables. I don't even know if that's the case at the Fremont Street Experience.
Well, there's a Vegas pretty good chance that speed. At some point this week she's asked somebody, does Mo Green still run the Tropicana?
Ma, Mo Green was a fictional character. You mean Bugsy Siegel.
I'll bet she knew Bugsy.
She may have. Yeah, might have gone to a sock hop. Young Bugsy.
So the Bears and Raiders played 15 times.
Okay, yeah. Okay, fair. More than the Bengals.
And the Raiders hold the series edge at 8-7.
Ooh. We got a chance to even up the mark.
And it has been pretty well.
I'd say it's even.
The Bears have won 3 of the last 5. So yeah, pretty even.
In our lifetime, I don't think any one team has had the dominant upper hand. I mean, they were both good in the early 80s.
Took the Bears 4 cracks at them to finally beat them. They lost the first 3 times.
And Kenny Stabler. Maybe not even that first game. What was the first year they played? What would that be like? Probably 71 or
72.
Something?
72. Raiders won 28-21 in Oakland.
In Oakland. Okay. Then, so that was the third year of the merger.
Then in
was Ken Stabler?
I'd have to look this up. They don't have the box score on that one. I could find
okay.
it. The next time, 76, was a nail biter. Raiders won 28-27.
Wow. Raiders won it all that year. Bears and the Bears were mediocre. So Bears actually gave them a fight.
Then they played again in 78. And
2 years.
Bears
2
lost
years
in overtime, 25-19. A walk-off touchdown by somebody. I can find out here.
Okay. And that was at Soldier Field too? So those were both John Madden teams.
Yep.
Probably all 3 of those. I think Madden had to have been around because 78, I think, was his last year. Those were great Raiders teams. So the Bears actually were mediocre. They played them tough then. They couldn't beat them.
Bears scored on a Mike Spivey 71-yard blocked field goal return to take a 9-6 lead. Because, of course, Bob Thomas missed the extra point. Boy, we see that a lot when we look back at these old games. As you know, of course, in the early 70s, as Bob Thomas would tell you, they had to kick extra points from the 40. Right? No, it was the 2.
No.
It was
from
the
2. But I think that was before Thomas's time, though, because Thomas came in with Peyton in 75.
Well, yeah, but this is 78.
Yeah.
Bob Thomas,
so they were
25-yard field goal made, extra point, missed. He did make an extra point on my favorite player, Roland Harper's touchdown.
No good on number 3.
Made a field goal to give the Bears the lead in the fourth quarter, only to have Errol Mann tie it up late. And then Art Whittington on a 1-yard run sent the Raiders on the plane happy.
I can just tell you that in the course of doing this, we've covered several Bob Thomas missed extra points.
Yes, we have.
We talked about the, and we may replay this, but the Bears-Packers game when they won 61-7. Bears scored 9 touchdowns, but Bob missed 2 extra points. He was exhausted, though, probably, in that
right.
one.
Oh, from and all then the kicking off and the extra points. And oh,
right.
It's terrible.
And then he also, we broke down that Bears-Redskins, that epic playoff game in 84 at RFK. He missed an extra point in a playoff game.
Yes, he did. There was a reason that Ditka could not wait to cut his ass.
Yeah. They would have won that game in regulation if it wasn't for Bob Thomas.
They would have. It would have been the Raiders would have had to have tried to score a touchdown late instead of tying up. 1981. So, Bears went to Oakland.
I remember that one.
23-6.
See, And that I want to feel, going off memory, I feel like Vince Evans had himself a game. And it makes no sense that the Bears won, because the Raiders were, they might not have had a great season, but they were defending Super Bowl champions, and the Bears ended up finishing in last place that year. And somehow managed to go into Oakland and beat them. And I remember, because the Raiders had that mystique, and that was the first game I remember watching.
Yeah, the Raiders were 7-7.
Kind of a shock.
The Bears were 5-9 heading into, or 4-10, excuse me. 4-10 going into the game. Vince Evans, 15 of 32, 240 yards, 3 touchdowns, an interception. He threw touchdown passes to Ricky Watts, 2 to Ricky Watts, and 1 to Kenny Marjoram.
Oh, good old Kenny Marjoram. Good old number 82. I vaguely remember the Marjoram. Marjoram was really good when he first kind of burst on. But Neil Armstrong would have been dead man walking, because that was his last season. So it wasn't enough to save his job.
The kicker at that point was
John Rivetto, right?
John Rivetto.
Yeah.
Who made all three of his extra points, at least. I don't know if he missed any field goals.
So Rivetto, so Thomas was gone longer than I thought.
He did.
Because Thomas was gone and then he came back.
Rivetto missed a field goal of somewhere between 20 and 29 yards.
Jesus.
God, what did the Bears have practice kicking? Seems like kicking was like a surprise every week. We have to do what? Oh, shit. I guess that's what Thomas is here for.
Right. That's right. That's why they brought him. Well, because Thomas came back in 84. So Thomas was an exile for, I think Thomas actually kicked for the Lions maybe for a year or two. And then he came back. Yeah, until they got Butler, they didn't really have much in that department.
So in the 78 game, Peyton had run for 128 yards. But in this game, he only carried the ball 7 times. For 28 yards.
Yeah, well, Vince Evans was throwing
yeah,
darts.
Vince was firing. Vince also ran 5 times for 47 yards, including a 25-yarder. Roe Harper, 15 carries, 49 yards, carried the weight for the Bears.
Outdid Sweetness.
Yep.
That's one of those games that doesn't make any sense. The Raiders probably just, I don't know if they were injured. Like I said, they were defending Super Bowl champs. I don't know if they're still, if that game knocked them out or something. I don't know how they lost to the Bears, because the Bears were bad. That was the Bears' first victory ever over Oakland.
Yep. And then their second victory ever over Oakland. One of the most memorable games of, it's got to be the most memorable Bear Raider game ever.
No doubt.
November the 4th, 1984. The Los Angeles Raiders at the Chicago Bears.
Also, once again, defending Super Bowl champions. Yeah. So the Bears beat them twice. So real quick, just to provide context, because what I remember about that Raiders game first going in was the week before, the Bears defense really, really started to emerge that season. In fact, I think statistically they were superior to the 85 Bears defense, because I think they had more sacks. But the week before, and I'll never forget, pretty sure it was the week before, but the Bears had played the Vikings. And good old Archie Manning, Peyton and Eli's dad, who was the long-suffering quarterback of the New Orleans Saints, was at the end of his career, and he hooked up with the Vikings. And the Bears defense sacked him, I think, like 9, 10, or 11 times. It was just ridiculous. And I remember watching it with my dad. And, you know, my dad, very superstitious. You know, he had a rule, you know, I think I mentioned before, in 83, there was a game where the Bears had were about to knock the Packers out, and Bart Starr was the coach. He was going to lose their job. And my mom, who remembered Bart Starr from, you know, being the Packers quarterback, and she had the nerve to express that she felt sorry for Bart Starr. And then, of course, my dad just shoots a glare across the room, because the game wasn't over yet, because Bart Starr was going to get fired if he didn't get the Packers to the playoffs. And sure enough, I forget the details of this game in 83, but the Packers ended up coming back and knocked the Bears out. The Bears ended up knocking the Packers out at Soldier Field a couple weeks later anyway, and Starr lost his job. But it was probably the closest my parents came to a divorce, because my mom had the nerve to, you know, show some humanity and express some sorrow for Bart Starr, because the game wasn't over yet. But this Vikings game was so bad that even my dad, he violated his cardinal rule. It didn't matter. Game was over. But he had to just basically say he felt sorry for Archie Manning, because poor old Archie Manning, who already had to suffer the indignity of quarterbacking terrible Saints teams. And he was a good quarterback. You know, he's an old quarterback for the Vikings, and the Bears were just just coming into their own, and they just dropped him on that Soldier Field turf. Like I said, 10 or 11 times. At the end of the game, Wade Wilson, future Bears coach, the late Wade Wilson, came into that game because Archie had had enough. I don't even know if Archie ever played again.
Was Archie, was he good old number four for the Vikings?
Oh, God. I can't remember what he was
my
for the
mind,
Vikings.
I somehow picture him being bludgeoned wearing number four.
Could be. There's some video, but I remember, and that was kind of like a Richard Dent's coming out party. Nice. Dent really kind of started making a name for himself. So the Bears defense is really starting to come into form. They sacked poor old Archie Manning's old ass a bunch of times.
I think it was
and
11
then,
times.
Was it 11? Jesus, can you imagine that?
Because I think we talked about the fact that in back they had 20 sacks in 2 weeks.
Because then that was the sort of the appetizer for the Raiders game. So the Raiders come to town the next week. The Bears are really sowing their oats. The defense is sowing their oats. And it was more of the same. And unlike the Vikings, the Raiders were really good. Like I said, they're defending champs. And I think they're pretty good coming into that game. I don't think they had, you know, they hadn't really fallen off.
They were 7-2.
Okay.
Taking on the 6-3 Bears. We knew it was a big game because the announcers were Dick Enberg and Father Murphy.
Good old Merlin. We would have the top matchup. That was, you know, as we said, and whenever the AFC would come to Chicago, the game would be on NBC. We were always a little more excited about that because it was kind of a novelty.
And I've said before, I have nothing to back this up. I always feel like the colors were better on NBC than they were on CBS.
Yeah, it was. There was something about their Technicolor or whatever. It always kind of gave you a little bit of extra juice because it was not on CBS. And especially this one, it was a nationally televised game. It had the number one crew and the Bears were good. You know, we've talked about it before. I mean, 84 Bears, they'd finally arrived. First time in our lifetime. I mean, I know they made the playoffs in 79 as a bit of a one-off, but what we're looking at this point when the Raiders come to town in 84, the Bears were really on the ascension, and this game was it hit all the marks.
So before we get into this, now you said your mom got in trouble with your dad for expressing sympathy about Bart Starr. My mom, similar thing about Lindy Infante. Yeah, maybe not. All right, so So Bears, Raiders. There was a lot going on in this one, and I know you want to talk about the only lineman who lost his job between 84 and 85 with the Bears.
Oh yeah, Kurt Becker
and his run-in with a very famous Raiders defensive lineman.
Hall of Famer, I believe, right?
Oh yes, yeah.
I was a Hall of Famer.
So Howie's story about Howie retired relatively young. And Al Davis tried to convince him to come back the year he knew he was going to be elected to the Hall of Fame. He wanted him to come back and play another year just as a situational pass rusher. And Al's whole thing to Howie was, how cool would it be to get inducted in the Hall of Fame in August and suit up in September to be the only active Hall of Famer? And Howie said he thought about it for about 5 minutes and said, no.
Yeah.
No. There's a reason I retired.
The only comp I have for that was Jim Palmer. Do you remember Jim Palmer's ill-fated comeback in spring training? I don't know, whatever it was, but he was trying to become the first Hall of Fame pitcher to pitch in a regulation.
It's funny. I've always thought one of the reasons he gave up on it, plus the fact that he was throwing 84 miles an hour or whatever it was one of the things he's most famous for is he never gave up a grand slam. Ever.
Really?
And I almost wondered if he's like, well, fuck, there's probably no way I can avoid this. Unless I guarantee they're going to take me out if I load the bases. Somebody's going to hit a fucking grand slam on me. I'm not coming back. Screw that.
Yeah, it didn't work out for Jim Palmer, and it would be even less likely in football, man.
He also wanted to pitch wearing just his underwear. Jockey, that's right. Jockey was going to give him an extra $1 million if he pitched in his underwear.
But I mean, football. If you're a Hall of Fame football player, that obviously means you've played several years. Right? Even if Howie was maybe a relatively young Hall of Famer, maybe not like.
Oh, he had at least like a 12-year.
Yeah,
at least.
And it's football.
And maybe he wasn't. Maybe it wasn't even that he was that young. It's just that he kept himself in such good shape.
Yeah.
That Al was like, hey, I think you could still play. I'd like to see you in the shower room again, Al.
That had to be in the early 90s then, because Long was in his prime in 84.
Howie Long, two middle names. Howard Matthew Moses Long.
Okay.
He played from... Yeah, he played 12 years, 1981 to 1993.
Okay, Jesus.
He was born in 1960, so he retired at 33.
Wow.
So he would only have been 38. That's why...
He must be in that list that we've talked about. We talked about it last year, but we replayed it for the Lions about the
yeah,
young
38,
Hall of
Famers. Ridiculously, he would have been like 3 years too old for that list.
Okay, for the top six.
33
right?
is probably not a really uncommon Hall of Fame age or retirement age.
To retire. No, yeah, 10 years. Yeah. I mean, you can put together a body.
Well, and
of
he
work
must have been,
years.
He must have been, he was only 21 when he broke it.
Like Peyton, because remember, Peyton yeah. is one of the younger Hall of Famers, even though he had a relatively long career. Felt longer because
yeah,
he never missed
one, he played one more year than Howie, 13 years.
Yeah, but Peyton was, you know, came into the league at 21 also.
Okay, so Kurt Becker. Howie Long, not a big Kurt Becker fan.
No, sir.
So Becker was the guard that got replaced by Tom Thayer.
In 85.
When Tom Thayer played, what did we decide, 18 games for the Blitz?
I think so. They had an 18-game schedule.
And then yep. had to play 19 games for the Bears, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually,
I think
Blitz played two playoff games. I think he played 20 games for the Blitz and then played 19 games for the Bears in one calendar year.
It could be. Although, remember the Blitz were not that good after they switched franchises with Arizona. You know, the first year they were pretty good. But regardless, I don't think Thayer was the starter at the beginning of 85. I think he took that job from Becker somewhere, you know, early in the course of that season. I mean, Becker was on the 85 Bears. It's just he wasn't the starter. Thayer took a starting job. And Becker was good. I mean, but Thayer was really good. But Becker, I mean, that was a good line, even in 84. It was the same line, like you said, it was the same line in 85, except you had Becker instead of Thayer. Goal number 79. And so yeah, he would have been the guard opposite Mark Bortz in that Raiders game. We should probably also reference, you know, I'm sure you'll provide a link, but it was a Deadspin, a pre-zombie Deadspin. Oh God, this is 8 years ago now, 2013, where they recap this game. It's a great read, and it details some of what you're about to talk about here. I remember I enjoyed the hell out of reading this when it was first published, and I've read it a few times since then. But it does go into detail about what a violent game. They refer to it as one of the most violent games in the history of the NFL. I suppose even Ditka is quoted as saying as such. A lot of them. Merlin Olsen had comments. It was a brutal game. Just brutal.
Yeah, it was the brutality, I think, was probably enhanced by the unforgiving Soldier Field turf, which was turf only in the loosest definition of there was some sort
parking
of
lot.
Outdoor
spray,
carpet,
right?
Glued.
Spray painted green.
Yeah, it was cement with a little fuzz on it.
Whenever I look at old footage from those days, I cringe every time a guy gets just tackled. You know, you got some 280-pound lineman just landing on top of somebody.
It was basically playing on an enormous pool table.
Yeah, yeah.
He had maybe a little felt, and that was about it.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So Howie claimed that Becker was taking cheap shots at Raiders defensive backs and linebackers at the ends of plays. Like he was nailing guys basically approaching
the
pile. He was just hitting guys late. And so Howie challenged him to come out to the parking lot.
He said, according to the article, he says, at one point, Long threatened Bears guard Kurt Becker, "I'm going to get you in the parking lot after the game and beat you up in front of your family," Long reportedly shouted at Becker. And then several years later, Long owned up to it. He said, "Yeah, I said it. He'd spent the day flying over the pile and hitting defensive backs late. He was my target for the game, but I had missed him and sprained my back, so I was upset. Everyone has their favorite threat. That's mine. Lyle Alzado says, I'll kill you and everything you have, or everything you love.
Everything you love. I'll kill you and everything you love."
So yeah, that Raiders team had so many characters, right? Because there's Alzado, right? Now I don't know if John Matuszak was still. He might not have been. Matuszak might have been with that 1980 Super Bowl Raiders team, but so many characters. Lester Hayes, yeah. You know, just dripping with Stickum in the secondary.
Matt Millen would have still been there.
Yeah, no, yeah, Matt Millen was fierce. Yeah, they had some great players, and they were tough and they were mean. But the Bears are up for the challenge. That's what made the game so satisfying. You know, as you're a Bears fan, right, we haven't really ascended any of these heights. And the Raiders had done it twice in 5 years, the world champions. And so it really felt good to sort of level up with the Raiders and, you know, and see Kurt Becker just get under Howie Long's skin like that. I think players – they got their licks in this game because that was the last game Jim McMahon played in the 84 season.
Yeah. And that, we don't know that. I suppose it would not have changed the outcome of the NFC Championship game.
Unlikely.
But they played a long time then with Steve Fuller as their quarterback.
And thank God they picked up Fuller. I never thought I'd say that. But Fuller was not even on the team beginning of the year because we mentioned Bob Avellini's swan song when he got picked off in Seattle, which might have been his last NFL pass, which enraged a young Andy Dolan. But yeah, Avellini was still one of their quarterbacks when that season started, and Rusty Lish was on the roster. So somehow they managed to pick up Fuller, who was still relatively young. He was the Chiefs starting quarterback late 70s, early 80s. It's a good pickup. I mean, Fuller wasn't great, but they absolutely needed somebody to back up McMahon. That didn't suck. So, yeah, Fuller ended up taking him the rest of the way, I guess.
So the stat that we always remember from this game was the 9 sacks and the fact that Mark Wilson, who had been a teammate of McMahon's at BYU.
Yeah, his predecessor, his quarterback.
Right, kind of the first – well, no.
Gifford Nielsen
was like the first of the what was
BYU
their, what was the
Cougars
crazy, what was their head coach
Lavelle Edwards
that you know chuck it all over offense.
Mm-hmm.
It was him, then it was Mark Wilson, then McMahon took it to new heights. McMahon had the record for most passing records broken. That's how many passing records he broke in NCAA history when he left, and then he got replaced by Steve Young.
Nope. Was it Young? Yeah, somebody Young, and then Robbie Bosco.
Right, okay. And then Robbie Bosco. And Robbie probably had the most ridiculous stats of any of those BYU quarterbacks. Yeah. Enough that the Packers couldn't wait to scoop him up, and then
it
turned out he was terrible.
And then, shortly after that, you had Ty Detmer, and then it kind of petered out. For a while there, that was a quarterback factor.
And now, Zach Wilson.
Oh.
Mark Wilson's son. No, it's not Mark Wilson's son.
Zach Wilson's a BYU quarterback?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Okay. But yeah, for a while, you're
right. He's 12 years old. The little fucker can throw the ball like 110 yards in the air. But
there was you're right, though. There was a steady succession of BYU quarterbacks that that played in the NFL.
So we remember that stat, but there are some others. Now, so the Bears get on the board in the first quarter. Walter with an 18-yard touchdown run. Bob Thomas makes the extra point.
Hey, how about that?
They take a 14-0 lead early on in the second quarter. Peyton runs for 8 more. Then it's going to be just field goals the rest of the way. Chris Barr, 44-yarder. He makes a 40-yarder in the third quarter, and then Thomas makes a 29-yarder late in the game. But there we go. My thing is being very slow here. So the Raiders passed for, as a team, Mark Wilson and I can't remember the other guy's name.
David Hum.
Hum. I was going to call him Huff. David Hum combined 12 completions in 28 attempts, 3 picks, 106 yards.
Pat, I'm surprised they got that many.
The Bears... How many more yards do you think the Bears passed for than the Raiders in a game they won 17-6?
12.
They passed for fewer yards. They passed for a combined. McMahon was 3 for 11 for 68 yards. Steve Fuller, red hot, 4 for 5 for 27 yards. They passed for 95 yards. Actually, 84 when you take the sack out.
This basically fits the narrative as to what a defensive game was. I mean, you said the Raiders' only two scores were field goals of 40 yards and beyond.
Yeah.
So they weren't even, they probably didn't even get into the red zone.
They probably didn't. I would wager that they did not.
I mean, if you get a 40 yarder, you're at the 23, and then Barr kicked a 44 yarder. So, yeah, Bears defense pretty stout.
So Walter ran for 111 yards on 27 carries.
Oh,
Calvin Thomas,
our guy,
5 carries for 23 yards.
Go number 33.
David Finzer, star of the game, 7
our punter,
28 yards, or 228 yards, 41 yard average. So here's how the sacks were distributed. Al Harris had a sack. Mike Hartenstein. Mike Singletary. Mama's boy Otis Wilson, a sack and a half. And
okay.
Richard Dent, four
Three?
And a half.
Wow. Like I said, Dent was really coming on. Nobody knew who he really Dent was a late round draft pick in 83, so he was not, highly scouted, and I think he also had a number of sacks against Manning the week before. He was emerging, and I think part of it was like they hadn't yet figured it out. So I don't think he was getting. They couldn't really double team him because they were always double teaming Hampton. I mean, it was Buddy Ryan's defense. I mean, he had so much talent. I mean, it's almost unfair that you're 11 versus 11 because if you're double teaming Hampton. And you have to account for Harris and Singletary and Wilson as the linebackers. Yeah, Dent's going to feast. And, so he's just beating whoever the tackle was all day long.
So one Raider passer completed a 38-yard pass. Do you know who that was?
I'm going to guess it was like a halfback option pass. Was it Marcus Allen?
It was Marcus Allen. He was one
yes.
for two for 38 yards.
Yeah.
Wilson was 7 of 19 for 70 yards. One pass went for 31. Of course, he had 31 yards of sack losses you have to delete out of his to get him
right,
to 70.
Because you have the team stats.
And David Hum, 4 for 7 for 56 yards.
Yeah, for those of you listening, there's a full broadcast of this game on YouTube. You'll feel the violence, and you almost feel for Mark Wilson. And you watch the game, and Wilson got banged up early, and he got hit hard. There were some hits. He just like, and so they go to Hum. And I remember watching this game. I remember like my dad, my older brother, was like, oh yeah, I kind of remember. He was like a long time backup, but he never played. If you look at David Hum's career line. He was with the Raiders going all the way back to 75.
Kind of like Cliff Stout.
Yeah, exactly.
And, Don Strock.
I mean, I'm just looking at Hum's line. He's a rookie in 75. The Raiders went to the Super Bowl in 76. He's getting into games, seven games, 14. He's probably just a holder, though. Like in 76, when they went to the Super Bowl, he played in 14 games. He went 3 of 5. So he's obviously out there taking snaps on field goals. He's hard. I mean, up until this game, this might have been his last game, too, because his season total for 84 was 4 completions, 7 yards.
I think it was the last game of his career, right?
Yeah.
He tore his knee off of him.
Well, right. And so, but I remember people in my family that had been watching football were vaguely familiar with him. He'd been there a long time, but he never played. He was like in case of emergency. I mean, like 76, 5 attempts. He didn't even make an attempt in 77, even though he played in all 14 games. 26 attempts in 78, no attempts in 79, 14 attempts in 80, 24. So, I mean, he didn't even have 100 passing attempts in what amounted to about almost a 10-year career.
He was the Chase Daniel of his era.
Thank you. Right, until he got exposed in the Bears game, and they knocked him around. He was a left-handed quarterback, too, if I'm not mistaken. And so
it was funny, they show the highlight of him getting hurt, and I, at the time, when I first saw it, I wondered if he really was left-handed or that was simply his only way. Because he gets just mauled. And the ball just like comes flying out, and I almost wondered. It was like, fuck it, just here, take it.
Yeah, Wilson gets knocked out. Hum comes in. Hum gets knocked out. Wilson has to come back in. We find out later he had a broken thumb.
Yeah, the way they explain it in that article was he early in the game, he gets hit and he hits his hair. And Merlin diagnoses him from the booth with whiplash. Dent throws him on the ground, and he hits his head, and he says he's got whiplash.
Oh, it's concussed. Yeah.
And he comes out, and apparently Hum comes in, but then Wilson's able to come back. So he comes back in. He plays for a while, but he hits his thumb on one of his linemen's helmets, and they hurts his thumb. So they take him, and he's in the locker room getting I'm sure the Soldier Field X-ray machine in 1984 was a real beaut. Some high technology there. It was probably just Ed McCaskey with a camera. You want a picture of your thumb?
He's pushing the pedals on the player piano to help manufacture the image.
And Hum gets broken into six pieces. Yep. And whoever is taking the X-rays, they have there's a TV on in there, and they look down and they say to Mark Wilson, "Do you guys have another quarterback?" And he's like, "No." And he's like, "Well, you probably should get back in there then." And Wilson said they never told him what the X-ray said. In fact, the article starts with him after the game, team doctor saying, "They won't tell you this, but you broke your thumb."
And part of the reason for that was because the Raiders were forced with the possibility of having to insert Hall of Fame punter Ray Guy, who, of course, is known as one of only two punters to have ever been drafted in the first round. But unlike Russell Erskleben of the Saints, Ray Guy lived up to it. It was actually a shrewd pick by Al Davis because he was a Hall of Famer. He was one of the greatest punters in the history of the game. He was a Hall of Famer, deservedly so. He's a great athlete. But he never played quarterback. And so the thought of having to put him in against this Bears defense that was already knocked out two quarterbacks. And I remember that Merlin and Dick were talking about it during the game, and they're kind of showing Wilson on the side. He wasn't overtly hiding, but you could just imagine the urine streaking down his leg as he's standing there. Like, really? You're going to ask me to take snaps under center? Fortunately for the Raiders,
There's
better judgment prevailed.
Well, there's a long delay because they're trying to pick up all of Hum's pieces. And so there's a long clip on the Deadspin article of Merlin Olsen and Dick Emberg talking, basically extolling the athletic brilliance of Ray Guy about how he runs the scout team. He's the quarterback on the scout team every week. So, of course, he's got some experience, but he's never thrown he's only thrown three passes in a games, and they were all on fake punts.
Fake punt formation.
But that he's got such a great arm, he can – this old football bullshit that they still bring out. He could remember Dieter Brock, they used to brag about this too. He could – they claimed Guy could be on his knees at the 50-yard line and throw the ball through the uprights.
Okay,
what fucking good does that do you? But that's great. He could do this. And Guy is kind of like ambling around back there, and at no point does he like walk up to Tom Flores and give the old, "All right, so if you need me to go in, what do you want me to run?" He's just kind of standing around like, "Oh, fuck, this is going to suck.
Please don't ask me.
Very, very relieved looking when Wilson comes trotting out. Wilson goes into the game, and one of his either running back or wide receiver has to snap the chin strap onto his helmet because he can't do it with his broken thumb. And Merlin notices it right away. And he's like, "He can't even do his chin strap." And but to Wilson's credit, he played the rest of the game. He missed a few throws because he couldn't actually grip the football. But he survived, and he did not get knocked out again.
And he's having to throw because they're losing. So
that was a precursor to a year later in Dallas when the Bears knocked Danny White out of a game. They broke his wrist in the 44-0 game. Gary Hogaboom came in to replace him, and they knocked Gary Hogaboom out, and White had to come back in.
With a broken wrist. I don't remember that.
Play with a broken wrist. I don't know that Landry made him attempt to pass because it was so blown out. I think he was just in there to hand off. But they had done it before, and they would do it again.
Wow, that pretty much just summarizes the Bears defense. By the way, David Hum did not play his whole career at the Raiders. Apparently, he left after 79 to hold a clipboard in Buffalo for a season and then Baltimore for two, but he came back in 83. He actually won two Super Bowl rings, and in both of those Super Bowl seasons combined, he was 3 of 5. Just wanted to set the record straight.
Still counting.
84.
He got the same ring that Jim Plunkett and Ken Stabler did, or maybe Ken Stabler both times. I don't know.
Stabler got one. Yeah, Stabler in 76, Plunkett in 83, and Plunkett also in 80. But David Hum was in Buffalo in 80. So, wow. Yeah.
So the most the most famous injury from that game was not suffered by either Raider quarterback. It was suffered by Bear quarterback Jim McMahon.
Yep.
Who I guess Merlin described it as, oh, he probably bruised his back. Well, he, on his way to rupturing his spleen.
No, he, lacerated kidney.
Oh, lacerated kidney. Sorry.
Lacerated kidney. Oh,
now, God. The story they didn't leave in there is one of my favorites was, so he got hit and he stayed in the game for a few plays. And I've told this story before on this very podcast.
Yep, yep.
The, you know, one of the tight ends shuttles the play in. And McMahon couldn't repeat the play because he couldn't catch his breath to say it. And when he gets to the line, Walter Payton realizes he's no way is he going to be able to yell out the, you know, the cadence. So Payton did it from running back. He called out the signals to get the ball snapped to McMahon because McMahon couldn't, you know, he basically was, his everything was filling up with blood. And they finally take him out of the game, and his agent tells the story in the Deadspin article of walking in and seeing Jim in full pads pissing blood into the toilet. And that's when Jesus they decided, Christ. You probably should go to the hospital. He didn't just go to the hospital. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks.
Yeah. He could have died.
Yes. That ended, thus endeth his 1984 season.
Yeah. Yeah. So brutal on both. I mean, the Bears delivered more hits as far as quantity, but McMahon obviously probably had the worst injury of the game, obviously. You know, broken thumb, that's going to heal. Freaking lacerated kidney. I mean, that's your freaking organs.
I don't know. I heard Bob Thomas stubbed his toe on one of the kickoffs. bothered him for a couple of hours. It was terrible.
The funny thing is, the Bears faced the other LA team the next week, and they lost. And that's like the game that I blacked out. And I don't remember. And you brought it up last year when the Bears played the Rams. That was the game where Eric Dickerson, because Eric Dickerson, this was the season in which he broke O.J. Simpson's single season rushing record. The Bears actually lost to the Rams the next week. You know, they weren't perfect, but you know, of course, at some point, you can't keep ascending. You're going to have a little bit of a setback. But it's just one of those funny things that after beating up Archie Manning, and then Mark Wilson and David Hum, they had a little bit of a stutter the next week in a game that I just cannot remember for the life of me. But still, at this point, you know, we were feeling pretty good about this defense of ours. 20 sacks in 2 weeks. Jesus.
So I was wrong. I told you before we started that I had memories of a preseason game between these two teams. It wasn't a preseason game. Unfortunately, it was the next regular season game between these teams.
87?
Yeah. December, 2 days after Christmas, December the 27th, 1987, the Bears went out to the L.A. Coliseum to take on the Rams, and they won.
6-3, right?
6-3. In a real juggernaut.
And I don't think the Raiders were at this point now starting to suck. So
yeah, the Raiders were 5-9 coming into this. The Bears were 10-4.
Yep. And, you know, the Bears, we've talked about this, where the Bears would always get off to great starts under Ditka, especially, you know, right before the Super Bowl and after. And they'd always sort of peter into the playoffs, like 2-4 in December. I think they beat the Raiders a couple weeks after, like, losing, like, 49-14 on Monday night to the 49ers. So, you know, very uninspiring victory as they head into the playoffs, in which they would get bounced right away at home to the Redskins. So, I just remember it was a real low score, and the defense always carried them all those years, and that, as evidenced by a 6-3 victory in L.A. First time the Bears played the Raiders in L.A. Because when they played them in 81, they were Oakland, right? That would have been one of the last games Oakland played the first time around.
So the 6-3 game, Mike Tomczak was the quarterback.
Of course.
12 for 27, 146 yards. Didn't throw a pick, at least. Payton led him with 82 yards on 20 carries.
Probably his last regular season game.
Yeah. Well, no, they would have played one more.
Really? In 86? Oh, because of the strike.
Well, they were 11-4, so they played.
Well, they all played. You know, they all played 15 games that year. They lost the game because of the strike.
Oh, okay. So it was his last regular season game.
Yeah, they finished. 11-4 that year. Yeah, they played three scab games, and then one game got taken off the schedule. So it was only a 15-game season in 87. So, yeah, it would have been Sweetness's last NFL regular season game. And, you know, he didn't, that was like the first year since his rookie year in 75, he didn't gain 1,000 yards. So I think they just wanted to, you know, send him off because he didn't really have that great of a season in 87.
The
Neil Anderson was waiting in the wings.
Yeah, so in 6-3 game, the Bears defense played. I got to pull up the team stats here. I'm going to get the total. Yeah, I thought this was going to be it. So they, it was less famous, but they had 9 sacks in the game.
Oh, wow.
Once again. Okay. And there's going to be another stat that's exactly the same, which is when we go through who got all the sacks.
Remember?
Stephen Michael got 2. Dan Hampton, 1.5 sacks. Dave Duerson got 1 sack. And Richard Dent, 4.5 sacks again.
Jesus Christ.
So two games in a row against the Raiders, he had 9 sacks. The Raiders basically, that and the Super Bowl MVP, they put him in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. Holy shit.
Mo Douglas had an interception.
Who did?
Mo Douglas.
Hey. Did he dance on the pole to celebrate?
Well, it was for no yards, so.
So Dent, that game was pretty uneventful. I know they played again in 90 earlier in the year. I talked about the Bears getting off to a hot start. I think they were 3-0 when they went to LA and they lost. The Raiders they were good in 90. So I guess I should correct myself. They didn't exactly go into a slumber after the mid 80s because the 1990 Raiders went to the AFC Championship game. That was the year Bo Jackson got hurt against the Bengals.
Oh, is that the year the Bills scored?
51-3, I think, was the. So, as per the script, the Bears started off 3-0, and actually in 1990, they were coming off that team that bottomed out under Ditka in 89. But then they bounced back for a couple of years, got off to their typical strong September start, and they went into Los Angeles and they got blitzed. They got blitzed by the Raiders. I think Tim Brown may have scored a touchdown against them. So that'd been the first time that they lost to the Raiders since the game in 78.
Yep.
But that was still a Bears playoff team. That was a Raiders playoff team.
90, they lost 24-10. The both teams were 3-0 going into the game.
Okay. Yeah. Raiders are good then, I guess.
Oh!
Art Shell is their coach.
I read that wrong. Jim Harbaugh threw an 80-yard touchdown pass to Pinky. Dennis Jennings.
Oh, nice.
I saw Jeff Jaeger got all excited because I thought it was when he was kicking for the Bears, but that was much later.
Oh, we'll get back to the Jaeger. That's 96. We'll get there in a minute. But yeah, that 90 game, I can't really remember much other than the fact that it was the first chink in their armor that year, first loss of the season.
So in that 90 game, 3 Bears completed passes. Jim Harbaugh,
Tom Zach. Hold on.
And if you can get this one right, you win a bag of soup.
It would not have been P.T. Willis because he came along the next year.
It was not a quarterback.
Oh, was it Anderson?
It was not. Although Neil did play.
Yeah.
It was. I didn't know this guy ever threw a pass. Johnny Bailey.
Oh.
Completed a pass for 22 yards.
Look at that goodness bag of tricks.
Can I tell who it was to here? No.
Johnny Bailey was a rookie in 1990.
Yeah, not a lot of rushing going on for the Bears. Neil, 6 carries for 26 yards. He led the team.
Neil was in his peak, so that would be one of his worst games probably because Neil was probably at the ascension of his career.
Leading receivers. Always a bad sign. The top two white guys, Brad Muster and RoboCop, Jim Thornton, both caught 3 passes. Also on the list, Tommy Waddle caught a pass for 23 yards.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't think Waddle got into a game before the 91 season. Waddle's coming out party was that Monday night game against the Jets in 91. So I didn't know he actually had game action.
Let's see who the hot shots for the Raiders were. Oh, Jay Schrader. Raider. 8 completions and 15 passes. 178 yards.
Was he the regular quarterback? Was he their only quarterback that day? Okay.
Boy, nobody gained any yards. Marcus Allen, 12 carries for 57 yards. Greg Bell, 10 for 46. That was Greg, right? Yeah, Greg.
Notre Damer, right? No. I got that wrong.
Oh, guess who led the Raiders in receiving? 4 passes for 103 yards.
Not Timmy Brown?
Including a 59-yarder. Former Bear. Super Bowl champion.
Who?
Star of
Willie Gault.
Stage and screen. Willie Gault. He had gone off to L.A. to become an actor.
Uh-huh. I remember that now. Willie Gault did go to the Raiders, and he did score a touchdown.
Tim Brown didn't catch a pass. He had returned three punts for 34 yards. Three Raiders caught passes. Willie Gault.
Okay.
Wow. Mervin Fernandez. And Ethan Horton.
I remember Ethan Horton.
Not a lot of offense in that game for either.
No, just like a lot of these so far. Yeah. 6-3, 17-6. three receivers catching passes. So
when they hooked up in 93, the Raiders won again.
All right.
16-14.
Can we dive into this game? Because I want to just say one thing. Neither of us are Dave Wannstedt fans, okay? But Dave Wannstedt was his first year in 93. Took him to the playoffs in 94. But that 94 season was bookended by two seasons in which the Bears basically missed the playoffs down the stretch by a game. And you can almost point it down. In 95, it was a Steelers game, which I will gladly go into when we cover the Steelers in a few weeks. 93 was very similar. They both had the same culprit, and it was Kevin Butler, who, by the way, I'm not a huge Kevin Butler fan either. It always bothered me that people like legitimized him as some sort of a tough guy. He's a fucking place kicker, but somehow he was accepted as, you know, Butler.
All right, here's an interesting, relatively recent Kevin Butler factoid. In Roquan Smith's final college game, which is game Georgia. Most famous for Tua coming off the bench and bailing out Alabama in the national championship game.
Okay.
Had Georgia hung on to win, Kevin Butler would have gotten a national championship ring because he was a graduate assistant for the Georgia Bulldogs. He had gone back to school and was a graduate assistant in his 50s or 60s, probably.
Yeah, or 50s for sure. That's a wild game. I can't remember the details. I was in DeKalb. I was working at the Pistol. I remember missing it, but watching the highlights. And it was this wild back and forth game. And the Bears totally had a chance to win it either in overtime or at the end of regulation. And Butler missed like a 30-yard field goal or something. So I'm just going to say that if anyone has any animus towards
in this
Kevin
93
Butler,
game.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't
it
know if they
the Bears scored a touchdown with 1:13 to go. Terry Obey got a 13-yard touchdown pass from Harbaugh.
Okay.
So, I don't know, did they get an onside kick and have a long
field goal to try
to win
it?
Yeah,
and it wasn't overtime. No, because it was 16-14. There's a point in the game where Butler missed, it may have been earlier, but he missed a total gimme, which would have been the difference in the game. And the Bears didn't get eliminated till like the second to last week of the season. I just feel like, you know, as much as Dave Wannstedt was a boob and he would have been exposed anyway, I feel like he probably like was kept up at night thinking in two separate seasons, Kevin Butler's inability to make a makeable field goal.
Well, and that's why
he sabotaged their season.
That's why he replaced Kevin Butler with
Carlos Huerta.
Carlos Huerta, who was just as bad as John Rivetto.
But I never blamed Wannstedt for getting rid of Butler, because if Kevin Butler cost me a trip to the playoffs in two separate seasons, much like Ryan Dempster, I would be very hard on him. But so yeah, the box score is probably not going to have it unless you have missed field goals. But
yeah,
he missed.
They don't have the play-by-play, but they should have missed field goals.
And it's possible that Jaeger missed one too. Like it was a weird, ugly kind of a game.
Butler was 0-for-2 field goals.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And
Doesn't say how long the attempts were.
Yeah, one was a shorty towards the end, and I just remember that when they were alive towards the end, and like that's a game that had they won, I think it would have changed it. It wouldn't have mattered. Obviously, the Bears were not going to compete with the Cowboys and 49ers back then. But at the time, you know, it was fair to gear a lot of your animosity towards Butthead for missing a gimme. So that was an ugly game. Raiders beat the Bears for the second straight time.
So
now we get to go to the Jeff Jaeger revenge game.
Yeah. 1999. The Raiders are back in Oakland. And it's week 3.
May have been in Oakland. Were they not in Oakland in 96 or no?
Oh, I didn't look. They probably were. Let's see.
I thought they went back in 94, 95.
Yep, 96,
okay. Anyway.
They were the Oakland Raiders. Yep.
Okay.
But they were in
96 they were. No, but you're right. You're right. 93, they were L.A. I was jumping ahead to 99. All right, so 96, it's the first
96,
time
they were Oakland, but they were playing at Soldier Field. So this is their Bears return to Oakland in 99.
Yes,
to
but
the beautiful,
96
then called Network Associates Coliseum.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah,
And
all I can remember about the 96 game was that the Bears had picked up Jeff Jaeger. Eric Kramer, who was coming off a historic season the year before, he got hurt, and tiny-handed Dave Craig came in, and Craig did okay. The Bears were alive that season. I mean, that was when the pieces were in place. Remember, they started the season by knocking off Dallas on Monday night, and then proceeded to lay an egg against Washington the next week. So they ended up 1-3, and that's when the bloom was off the rose for Wannstedt. But they did redeem themselves against the Raiders.
So in 99 would have been Gruden and Geron.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, but 96, all I can remember is Jaeger won it towards the end of the game, and he was a longtime Raiders kicker. So that's all I can remember about the 96 game. Bears won.
Did I skip 96? Is that what happened?
You may have. You may have jumped ahead, but
I did.
I don't know.
I missed the win. There you go. So, yeah.
All I know is that Dave Craig was the quarterback. I'm fairly confident.
There it is. Jeff Jaeger, and 3 fourth-quarter field goals.
Oh, by the way, I need to jump back to the 1990 game to see how many sacks Richard Dent had, because Dent was still a Bear.
In the 93 game, Rashawn Salaam scored an 11-yard touchdown run.
You mean 96?
96, sorry, 96. And that made it 17-10 Oakland, and then the Raiders got Jaeger bombed. He made a 24-yarder, a 40-yarder, and a 30-yarder. I'm sure he flipped off Al Davis on his way off the field. And, of course, he is, until now, the most prominent Bear in our lifetime to wear the stripe.
Numero
the
uno.
Bears number one. And I have my – you can see this. I have my Jeff Jaeger shirt on. There it is, number one.
Do you have Jaeger scratched out?
Yeah, it doesn't say
feels.
Well, yeah, a lot of people took old. I lost so many fans of Jeff Jaeger that they took their old Jaeger uniforms and they put duct tape over it, wrote Fields on it. Mine's the opposite. I took a Justin Fields one, put duct tape on it, and wrote Jaeger to celebrate the true number one. Or I also have a Jeff George uniform somewhere, and I put that on.
Oh, that's right. But Jeff George never played in a game for the Bears.
No.
But real quick, 1990, Richard Dent did not have a sack. The Bears only had one. It was by Ron Cox. So Richard Dent's career sack total remained at 9.
Good old number 54.
Check the 93 game. That's right. Was Ron Cox the guy, or was it John Roper who fell asleep in
John
the
Roper.
Dallas? It was Roper. Yeah. I was have a tough time distinguishing
one of
those two.
One of the great Jimmy Johnson stories of all time.
Absolutely. Dent was on. Go ahead.
If Emmitt Smith falls asleep. Oh, if John Roper falls asleep in a team meeting, you cut him. If Emmitt Smith falls asleep in a team meeting, you wake him up and ask him if he wants a pillow.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's the difference.
Yeah, Richard Dent went sackless in 90 and 93 because he was still on the Bears in 93. So Dent retired with 9 sacks against the Raiders, all on the strength of 2 games.
So was 93 was his last season? He went to the Niners in 94. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah, I think
I
he was done after 93.
I remember telling one of my buddies in Northern. When he was becoming a free agent, everybody was like, oh, I think we're going to lose Dent. I'm like, not going to lose Richard Dent. Look at him. He's too lazy to move. He's not going to want to pack up all of his shit. I was sure he was just going to re-sign again to not bother to have to change houses. I was wrong.
Yeah.
But not a terrible theory.
He came back,
theory.
Too.
Yeah.
He came back. He
still
back
kept
in
the house. That's why. He's like, I still got a house there. I might as well go play for the Bears.
Well, speaking of theory, I think he may have come back to Tudor John theory, maybe
yes.
A little bit.
Oh, another great
first round. Great,
another great draft.
First round pick in 94. So, all right. So 96, the Jeff Jaeger game. There you go. But the Bears go nowhere. I don't know where the Raiders were doing. And then in 99 was back to first time in Oakland in 18 years. I guess that was another early season game. That was the Gary Croton run and gun offense. I think Macy Brooks caught his first NFL touchdown. Maybe I'm wrong, but they got blown out in that game. I don't think, I can't think of anything significant other than, Shane Matthews.
Oh, 99. They only lost 24 to, 17.
Okay.
And they were up. They were up 17-14 at the end of the third.
Oh,
it took a Michael Husted 47-yard field goal and Tyrone Wheatley. 8-yard touchdown run to beat the Bears.
I forgot about Tyrone Wheatley.
Ricky Dudley and Tim Brown caught touchdown passes that day for Rich Gannon and the Raiders. Was that his MVP year?
No, his MVP year would have been not that they went to the Super Bowl, but the year before or 2 years before, something like that. So, yeah, Gannon was already pretty old, but he was ramping up. So, yeah, once again, the Raiders – I kind of had it in my head that the Raiders had a dark age, and maybe they did, but it wasn't. Maybe it was after this period, or maybe after Gruden, because they never really went too many years in a row without being relevant. Because that, you know, 84, they were defending champs. They were still okay in 87. In 1990, they went to the title game. Yeah, and then in 1999, you know, they like I said, they were ramping up again. So they were never really that bad.
This was a pretty star-studded Bears offense.
99.
I was wrong about Macy Brooks, but he didn't catch. Curtis Conway caught a touchdown, not Macy.
No, Macy
Brooks
held 3 catches for 51 yards.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, just listen to these names. Woo. Guys who caught passes for the Bears that day: Curtis Conway, 4 for 33 yards. Curtis Enos, 4 for 37. Macy Brooks, 3 for 51. Bobby Engram, 3 for 42. Ryan Wet Knight, 3 for 9.
He must have had it tough in high school.
Marcus Robinson, 2 for 29. Glenn Milburn, 2 for 9. Ooh. Ty Halleck, 1 for 3.
Don't even remember Ty Halleck.
John Allred, 1 for 3.
John Lynch's brother-in-law.
Guys who threw passes for the Bears that day: Shane Matthews was 20 for 3.
And McNown.
170 yards. And Cade McNown, in his return to California, 3 for 5 for 38 yards. How could they possibly lose? But they did.
Frustrating. I don't remember that the Bears actually were leading that game. And they, you know, they blew it late. And Tyrone Wheatley, I always felt he went to Michigan, right?
He did.
I always felt bad for him because he could have gone pro after his junior year and may have been a first round pick, and he decided not to, which, you know, to me is like evidence, like always take the money. And he got hurt his senior year, and he hurt his stock. So I think if Tyrone Wheatley had gone pro after his junior year, he would have made a little bit more money in the NFL. But
Tyrone Wheatley Jr., you know who he played for?
No.
The Bears.
What?
Offensive lineman.
Jesus.
I don't know if he ever got in a game, but he was suited up.
Was it during the John Fox era? Because that's when I blacked out.
I think it was just a couple years ago. Might have been last year.
Okay. Why do I not remember that? I think I would have remembered that. All right.
Well, let's look. Tyrone Wheatley Jr. Also known as TJ Wheatley. Nobody's ever called him that.
No. By the way, you mentioned Bobby Engram. I always kind of liked Bobby Engram.
No. He's on the Bears now.
Oh.
He's on their practice squad.
Wow.
It wasn't last year. It's now. Well, wait till they unleash him on the league. Justin Fields and Tyrone Wheatley should do it this week. Fire all the big guns at the same time.
Make it happen, Captain. Wow, I see, too, Curtis Enos scored a touchdown in that Bears-Raiders game. That's a rarity. It's like finding a unicorn. So, all right, so.
Oh, God, 2003, this is really something.
This is the Cordell Stewart, right? Yep. This is at the new Soldier Field. And the only thing I remember about this game is that this game occurred about 5 hours before Kerry Wood and Joe Borowski closed out the Cubs' first postseason series victory in 95 years. Happened on the same day as Cordell Stewart vanquishing the Raiders at New Soldier Field in 2003.
I remember about that day was the Bear Raiders. I don't remember that. I remember Sebastian Janikowski making 4 field goals in the second quarter.
I was in Madison all week because my wife had a conference. So I watched that whole series like at various bars in Madison, and I remember watching that Bears game.
In fact, if you were a field goal enthusiast, it was boner time in the second quarter. Paul Edinger, 35-yarder. Janikowski, 36-yard. Janikowski, 39. Janikowski, 32. And at the horn, Janikowski, 33-yarder. That put the Raiders up 18-3.
Wow.
Edinger made a 50-yarder in the third quarter to make it 18-6. And then Marty Booker caught a 14-yard touchdown pass from Cordell.
Okay.
The great Stanley Pritchett. Do you remember Stanley Pritchett?
As a Patriot, right?
He was a Bear that day. 8 yards. 8 yard touchdown run, and then they went for 2.
He was a Dolphin.
And Cordell Stewart punched it in, made it 21-18 Bears. Janikowski tied it, and Paul Edinger, with no time remaining, made a 48-yarder to send the fans home delirious. Bears won 24-21.
From New Soldier Field. That was the first year of the new stadium.
Stanley Pritchett. I don't remember that at all.
Well, he wasn't New England. He was Miami. I do remember the name. I don't remember accurately who he was because he played for the Dolphins And
did he even play for the Bears? It was a fullback.
Yeah, he was a big running back. Played for the Eagles. Yeah, he was actually on the Bears for 3 years. Wow. Actually started 11 games that year in 2003. Who knew?
Somehow I blacked all that out. Sorry,
yeah,
Stanley.
Well, we were preoccupied. Yeah. The Bears were not good in 2003. That was Jerron's last season.
Then we could usher
and now,
in.
Of course, since we're post realignment. So now you're playing other conference every 4 years, not 3 years from this point. And I got to say, I don't really recall the 2007 game, which is weird because it's the year after the Super Bowl.
Yep. Lovey packed up the Bears and took them off to what was then the name changes every year. McAfee Coliseum. Probably not named after former Colts punter Pat McAfee, but could be.
Or former Bears Hall of Famer George McAfee.
Yeah, that's probably who it is.
Yeah.
Isn't the McAfee from, isn't he like, didn't he go nuts and go to prison? This is like the antivirus software guy.
Yes. Conspiracy theorist. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't, I'd have to just try to divine this from the box score. The Bears were, 3-5 going in. The Raiders are 2-6.
Yep.
Bears won 17-6. Cedric Benson scored a touchdown.
Oh, nothing but field goals until 3:11 left in the game. Woo!
Oh, I remember this game at Oakland. I kind of remember this now. This was a game where Grossman came off the bench and pulled the game out.
Yeah,
the Bears
Brian
were still
Greasy.
Alive.
Brian
yeah,
Greasy
sucked.
At the start.
The one, yeah. Grossman, you know, he was right. He was up and down, obviously. Led him to the Super Bowl the year before and a little inconsistent. He had a good year on balance in spite of some awful games. One thing I'll say about Rex Grossman is that I don't recall the Bears ever losing a game with him at quarterback in which they were leading late. And he actually pulled some games out. And this was one of them. And he almost kind of earned his job back in this game. So I do remember this game now because he came in relief of Greasy and yeah, that 14 fourth
quarter.
Yeah,
this was like his Jim McMahon in the Super in the
just like it. Yeah, and I'm sure
59-yard touchdown pass to
wiped out
Bernard
a linebacker on a block too.
Yeah. Well, it's probably Garrett Wolf because he played in the game, or it could have been the original Adrian Peterson. He also had two rushes for 6 yards.
Yeah, that's okay. I kind of remember that now. I remember only because Grossman was because I was always kind of pulling for that pudgy little bastard, even when he drove me crazy. And he redeemed himself this game. Came off the bench and led him to 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns. And the Bears were still alive for a few more weeks.
Bears were led in tackles that day by Hunter Hillenmeyer.
Helen Huntermeyer
and Adam Archuleta, who I'm sure didn't see a single guy that he tackled because he was ramming his head down the entire time, like always. Pat Manley had 2 tackles. So apparently a lot of punting. How many times? Yeah. Brad Maynard punted 9 times, yeah. So Pat had lots of chances for tackles.
Yeah, ugly game. Ugly game. McAfee Coliseum. Yeah, okay. So move on. I don't know what else to say about that one.
So 2011.
I remember this one.
Still Lovey, right?
Yeah, so this would
Lovey's
have been
last year. This
is actually kind of bittersweet. No. It was sort of second penultimate year.
Okay.
So this was the year, the week before, I want to say, I could be wrong. The week before is when the Bears were absolutely flying as close to the sun as possible. They beat the Chargers at Soldier Field. They're a legitimate title contender at that point. I think they were 7-2 maybe going into this game.
Oh, yeah.
Cutler got hurt, though. He broke his, he got hurt in the Chargers game.
Broke his.
But it wasn't necessarily.
He broke his hand on a tackle on an interception, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't necessarily season ending. The Bears were flying high, right? And it was like, okay, you're facing 3 consecutive. You already beat one of them. You already beat the Chargers, but you have 3. There's an odd scheduling glitch. You had 3 consecutive AFC West opponents, and at that point, the Bears were. I wanted to say they were 7-2 going into the Raiders game, and it was like, okay, well, you got the Raiders, you got the Broncos, you got the Chiefs. They all stunk, really. And you're going with Caleb Haney. And it was like, all right, well, you only have to win like one of these games, preferably 2. Okay. If you can. And the Raiders game was the least depressing. I mean, we all know about the Broncos game and we've talked about the Chiefs game. The Raiders game was kind of like one of these ones that they sort of punted. You know, they didn't really feel like they were in it. The final score is 25-20, but that's only because Haney threw like an 80-yard touchdown late, right? There's got to be somewhere.
Well, he threw a 9-yard touchdown pass to Kellen Davis.
No, but he
may have been set up with a long pass.
It was set up with the long one, but they weren't really in this game. But it was the first of that sort of baton death march where the Bears come into this game. You know, they're 7-3. Sorry, not 7-2. And then did they win another game that year? I mean, they may have, but by the time they won another game, I don't think it mattered. They played themselves right out of contention because they didn't have a flipping backup quarterback. Because whatever Caleb Haney showed them in the NFC title game the previous January, they felt, yeah, okay,
we're good.
We can go with this guy. And then when it was put to the test, it failed miserably. Yeah, they didn't win another game till the last game of the season when they were already out of it against the Vikings. So, but the Raiders game was the first one. The Raiders were, 6-4. They weren't bad. So it wasn't a game you expected them to lose. That was the one you expected them to punt on. It was the two subsequent games that really hurt. And again, Dan Janikowski, he was a Raiders kicker for a long time. Because he was in this game. So he was in the game in 96. He was in the game in 99. Or was he in the game in 96? I think he was, right? Yeah, he came into the league. No, he wasn't in 96 or 99. Sorry.
Yeah,
he was in the league a long time.
In the 2011 game on the Bears' second-to-last drive, the one that ends with the touchdown pass to Kellen Davis, he completed an 81-yard pass to Johnny Knox.
Okay, that's it.
And then the Bears actually got the ball back with a minute one, and I can't imagine why the Bears weren't better. He completed an 8-yard pass to Sam Hurd. Do we know what's up with Sam Hurd these days?
So check cell block D. That's our NIU guy.
Then a 22-yarder to Roy Williams. That got the ball to the Bears are still only on there. Oh, they get the ball on their own 4. 8-yard pass gets to the 12.
With a minute to go. All right.
Then the 22-yard pass to Roy Williams. Haney spikes the ball. Then incomplete for Earl Bennett, complete to Forte for 12 yards, and then the game ends on a Caleb Haney intentional grounding. That's a great way to end the game.
How appropriate. Yeah. That's just appropriate.
Wow. 2015 would be the – this is a huge moment for the franchise.
You can take this one because this is my blackout period. I have no recollection of any of the.
This
was
the first win of the John Fox era.
Is that right?
Yeah, I believe.
Hey, who's up?
22-20. Yeah, the Bears had started 0-3.
Yeah, I got nothing. I got nothing. I was worried about the Cubs were beating up on the Cardinals around this time. I'm sure I was aware of the Bears. They're on the TV, but nothing stuck. So
Jay threw a 7-yard touchdown pass to Eddie Royal. Derek Carr, who they will see on Sunday, 26-yard touchdown pass to Amari Cooper. Carr threw a touchdown pass to Roy Hello. Cutler threw a 5-yard pass to Martellus Bennett. Robbie Gould kicked a field goal. Sebastian Janikowski kicked a field goal. Robbie made a 54-yarder. Janikowski made a 41-yarder. And with 2 seconds left, Robbie Gould fed his family with a 49-yarder. Bears win. And then spurred them on to greatness under John Fox. Who's still the coach today, right? Isn't he still? No,
I think he's not. I'm going to put this game into the category of forget this crap because I don't have an ounce of recollection of this game whatsoever. Because like I said, it was kind of like when the Cubs bottomed out and hired Theo, and I knew they were going to be bad. I just didn't pay attention. This is how it was when they hired Fox, and they kind of were trying to start over. Just like at this point, I'm like, I'm too old to follow this shit that closely, and I don't have hardly any memories from 15 and 16, and then 17 when Trubisky came along. I was getting back into it, so. I'll take your word for it, Andy.
So the last time these two teams played was the second red flag in the Matt Nagy era.
Yep. So
first one had been the offense's complete lack of anything against the Eagles in the playoff game.
Yeah, the actual playoff game.
Okay. And now they are 3-1, heading out to England to play at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London. Yeah. And you figure, all right, the Raiders had both of their starting wide receivers were out. And you're like, this will be easy. This is the Khalil Mack revenge game. Everything was setting up. It was going to be great.
Yep.
And John Gruden, for love him or hate him, whatever you think of him, completely outcoached the visor.
He did.
He basically looked at his roster and said, well, we got three tight ends that are healthy. Fuck it. We'll just throw to them the whole game, and we'll run Josh Jacobs. And it worked. It was 17-0 at halftime, the Raiders over the Bears. And then give the Bears credit, they came back and they took the lead in the third quarter.
What was disheartening about this game was that it was the first time in like this current Nagy era that the defense really failed to help them out. Because the offense went and fished that game out of the water.
Right.
Was it Chase Daniel? Was he the quarterback? He was. Yep. So this was just 2 years ago. They're playing the Raiders again because of the 18-game schedule. It's like a random thing.
Right, this was the bonus game. This was the game that would not have been played had they not had the...
Because otherwise, they're not scheduled to play the Raiders for another couple of years normally. So it was just a couple of years ago. Yeah, and I didn't know the Raiders were 2-2. I just thought they were terrible going into this game. I think maybe it was more that our confidence was high with the Bears because they were coming off a divisional championship. Yeah. And
they were three and one. Pick up where they left off.
Yep. And then they fell way down in that game, and then took the lead. And then I remember it was like kind of the first chink in Khalil Mack's armor. I felt like he did not have a good game.
No, he did not have a
good game. Human for the first time.
Dave Montgomery scored a touchdown. Eddie Pinheiro was the kicker. He made the extra point. And then Allen Robinson caught two touchdown passes from Daniel. Bears take the lead. And you think, all right, well, they're just gonna,
Yep.
Order has been restored, but no. So on the day, I'm going to pull up the passing stats for Derek Carr.
Yeah, I'm trying to think now. There were like weird things that happened in that game. Like, wasn't there like a big fumble? Like it was a big bad snap. Like the Bears had all kinds of advantages in this game. They could not take advantage. Maybe I have it wrong. It's funny. I can recall with exacting detail, like the Jeff Jaeger game from 18 years ago. And then I struggle to come up with details from 2 years ago. Hasn't been hardwired yet.
So Carr was 25 for 32 for 229 yards. He completed passes to 9 different receivers. His top 3 targets were Trevor Davis, Foster Moreau, and Darren Waller. They're tight ends.
Well, yeah, I know. He's good now, right?
Yeah, was kind of his coming out game, actually. He only caught 4 passes, but
those
big ones. Josh Jacobs ran 26 times for 123 yards. He also caught 3 passes for 20 yards. I think the wide receiver who caught the most passes was DeAndre Washington. I mean, that's what we thought. It's like, well, they're not going to be able to move the ball because they don't have any wide receivers. Well, it didn't really.
How disheartening. And you know, you're right though, too. I know that Chucky sometimes he's easy to mock, especially when he was an analyst. He's a good coach.
He's an especially good offensive coach. And they'll find that out again on Sunday. But the biggest difference in them is that Gruden and Nagy both have a certain way they want to play offense. But Gruden has proven time and again that if he doesn't have the guys to play it, he will adjust.
He'll adapt.
Nagy is like, no, we're still going to run this shit. Right. Even if it's not going to work.
I will put this square peg in a round hole if it kills me.
Right. Which is why you can switch to career mediocrity Bill Lazor, and all of a sudden the offense works. Because Bill's just going to run plays that the guys on the team can run, where Nagy is going to prove that his shit works, even when it doesn't.
Unreal.
But this is a perfect Nagy game. So he's got his backup quarterback plan, and the Bears rush 17 times the entire game. Dave Montgomery only gets 11 carries for 25 yards.
Granted, they were down 17-0, but not until the second quarter.
Yeah. Going to air it out with weenie arm Chase Daniel.
Jesus.
But
Daniel actually had 2 picks. It was 22 of 30, 89.7. Probably one of the greatest games of his career, looking at it, even with the 2 picks. But yeah, just what are you doing? Yeah, Montgomery is 11 carries, 25 yards.
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember, is this the week after Mitch hurt his shoulder against the Vikings? I think that's what happened.
They did beat the Vikings the week before.
Yeah. Mitch got hurt in that game. And then he had to wear the harness when he came back.
That's right.
And then he wouldn't run.
That's right.
And it was kind of the end of him as the dual threat running passing quarterback. It was almost like he got in the habit then of not just taking off. I don't think it would have helped.
He was coached, right? He was discouraged from taking off.
Yeah,
right?
It wasn't his own. You're going to get hurt.
It wasn't like he was gun shy. They told him not to.
But, you know, one of the things we like to do in this podcast is talk about the similarities between organizations. And, I mean, the immediate thing you think of is the both teams have historically famous charismatic owners, Al Davis and Virginia McCaskey. Basically the same thing. To the fact that, I mean, I know that over the years the NFL discouraged Virginia from wearing the white tracksuits to owners' meetings.
In the pomade.
Yes, and just slicking her hair back.
Al Davis was a character. We should probably just dive in that real quickly because he wasn't just their owner. He was their first coach, right? I believe he was the first coach in Raiders history.
So he had been an assistant for the Chargers, right?
Oh.
Came up under...
So he was not their first owner. He
bought Sid Gilman.
Wow.
Or he coached with Gilman somewhere because that was maybe his whole ethos
NFL.
With the just we're going to throw the ball as far as we can down the field. He just wants super fast guys.
Which the AFL ball. Encouraged.
Maybe Gilman and him were on a staff somewhere else together. But yeah, probably and Al was NFL, a Al was a very successful coach. He was also commissioner of the AFL.
He was?
Yes. He was commissioner during the merger. And it was part of the reason why he hated Pete Rozelle so much. He felt like they got screwed over in the merger. And so he would routinely sue the NFL to the fact that Pete hated him. Al felt like – there's a great documentary. There's a great 30 for 30 on Al. It's weird in that they hire an actor to play Al and they interview him and they do like the Irishman face thing. It's like if you just – it's not very well done, that part of it. But the rest of the documentary is really good, and it details the NFL tried to portray Al as being paranoid that the NFL was out to get him, but they have a lot of examples about the NFL was out to get him and rules they changed and
really
how you know the legacy, even his legacy, the Tuck rule, like would they have called that against any other team but the Raiders? It's like that would have been a fumble. 99 uh-huh. times out of 100, except the one time it happened, it was going to benefit the Raiders, and fuck Al. That's an incomplete pass.
Wow. You know, yeah, I'm ignorant here. I did not know. He was not the original owner. He worked his way up, kind of like Paul Brown in a sense. Okay. He managed to leverage his way in. He was their coach, but he did not become their owner until 72. So he wasn't even their owner when they went to their first Super Bowl.
But he was coach.
He was.
Yeah.
Not the coach in the Super Bowl. It was somebody else named Rauch. But,
he was on the staff. Because he gets credit, whether he deserves it or not, for the color scheme.
Yeah. Okay. He did set the tone in the 70s.
The Raiders, when they think of the Raiders, everybody thinks of the iconic, the black jersey with the silver numbers and the silver helmets. But I will submit that the coolest uniform that they have, and one of the coolest in the NFL, is the white jersey with the silver numbers and the black trim. That's a really cool uniform.
The one they wore when Mark Wilson was getting pounded into a pulp.
Yeah. And they still break it out from time to time. Their normal road uniform now is white with black numbers with silver trim. But every once in a while, they'll reverse it. And it's a really cool looking uniform.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to be doing some Al David reading up on him because I had a lot of misperceptions. Fascinating character.
And one of the things he was great at was reclamation projects. I mean, there's a whole...
Well, Jim Plunkett.
He basically, his whole team was built out of those guys.
John Matuszak.
Lyle Zeno. Ken Hendricks. Hendricks. The Stork.
Ted Hendricks.
Yeah, Ted. Ken was the guy who owned I was a billionaire on ABC Supply in Beloit. That'd be a terrible. I don't think Ted Henderson was a billionaire. He also would famously war with his own players. Him and Marcus Allen had a terrible falling out, and that led Marcus to go to the Chiefs when he was still really good, although Al wouldn't basically let him have the ball for 2 years. And Marcus actually joked that when he got to the Chiefs, he was so well rested. He goes, he added 2 years to my career because he made me sit on the bench for 2 years.
Wow.
But he did crazy shit like traded for Bo Jackson when nobody thought Bo was going to play in the NFL because Tampa taking him number one, Bo had told them that if you take me, I'm going to go play baseball, and they didn't believe it, and he did. And Al traded for his rights and decided a half a season of Bo was better than none.
Yep.
And it worked out that deal.
Well, they went to the title game, even though Jackson had gotten hurt. But, yeah, I mean, Jackson was a great running back for a short period of time.
He drafted Sebastian Janikowski in the first round. And everybody's like, what the hell, you drafted a kicker in the first round? And Janikowski was a good kicker for a long time, but it probably was dumb.
Well, and as I said earlier, he also drafted Ray Guy in the first round. But that didn't, you know, that worked. Ray Guy was
prompted, which prompted Wani to draft Todd Sauerbrunn in the second
round. That's true. They drafted a kicker, a place kicker, and a punter in the first round.
That was part of Al's justification. We took Ray Guy in the first round. He's a Hall of Famer.
Well, and I will say Janikowski had a great career.
Yeah, he was a good kicker for a long time.
Oh, he was there for
oddly
forever.
Shaped, but
yes.
A good kicker.
Yes.
He hired Lane Kiffin when Lane had never been a head coach anywhere. He was an offensive coordinator in USC, and he hired him to be the coach. The problem with that was he insisted on taking Jamarcus Russell, number one, and Lane kept telling him that Jamarcus couldn't play, and then Al had to basically say, all right, fine, I'm not wrong, you can leave, and then it turned out that Jamarcus really couldn't play.
Yeah, he was the commissioner apparently for 1 year in 1966 in the AFL. But he also hired John Madden.
Yep.
Shrewd move. And then, after Madden, you know, he had pretty good with coaches because Flores. Can I just say, too, Tom Flores, it really bothers me that it took so long for Tom Flores to make the Hall of Fame when Bill fucking Cowher got in as soon as he could.
Yep.
Bill Cowher was with Pittsburgh forever. And yeah, he finally won a Super Bowl in 2005 after he had been there for 13 years. Fine. All right, whatever. He lost the Super Bowl in 95 and won it 10 years later. Tom Flores won two fucking Super Bowls in 80 and 83.
Yeah.
And he just got into the Hall of Fame like 2 years ago.
Well, and Tom was the first Latino head coach, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't Art Shell the first black head coach?
He was. And that's another thing I would not have ever guessed about it. According to the Wikipedia, Al Davis was active in civil rights, which is not a line I expected to see. So he's refusing to allow the Raiders to play in any city where black and white players had to stay in separate hotels. And he was the first NFL owner in the modern era to hire an African-American head coach. And Art Shell did take them to that title game in 1990.
So. He had Otis Sistrunk played for him, right? And Otis didn't go to college.
Okay.
In fact, I think it was Dan Meredith who said that Otis went to the University of Mars.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's like even hiring Flores, he was the second NFL owner to hire a Latino head coach, first to hire a female chief executive. So I didn't, of all the things you can say about Al Davis, I didn't think that he'd have like boxes checked in the progressive category.
All right, but if we're gonna, we need to be fair. So think about what, since she took over when her dad died. Virginia Hallis McCaskey has done a lot of the same things.
Love you, Smith.
She hired the first NFL coach with a hair lip and Dave Wannstedt, breaking that barrier. That was great.
In fairness, that might have been more Michael, but yeah.
Well, that could have been.
Yeah, you know, it kind of was. Remember the matching trench coats?
The first head coach who had a failed hair plugs, Mark Trestman. These are similar things.
They are.
It really,
really
is. I mean, it's,
yeah, the parallels are eerie.
It really is
eerie. When you stop and think about it.
They're basically the same person, just one male and one female.
That's right. Yeah.
Pioneering. She's engineering their move out of Chicago to Arlington Heights, just like he kept moving from city to city.
Yep.
Yeah, so he leaves. He leaves Oakland to go to L.A. under the first under the promise that he was going to get a stadium built. And then when they couldn't get the stadium built, then they were going to remodel the Coliseum and put in a bunch of luxury boxes. And when they finally determined that they couldn't do it, he said, F them, and he went back to Oakland. And so at one point, he was under breach of contract suits in two different cities.
Including the one that he
one of whom he has gone had gone back to. If you ever see an A's game now, there's this huge monstrosity in center field. It's this awful black.
Yep.
It's these big skyboxes. And they ruin, I mean, Oakland Alameda Coliseum, and then it's a million names after that. It was never a really great stadium, but it's completely ruined by this eyesore in center field. And they call it Mount Davis.
Yeah. You mentioned that actually last episode,
which is just awful.
And then he also produced his son Mark.
Oh, one of the most handsome men in America. I don't know if you've ever seen. So Mark Davis is building a mansion outside of Vegas.
I've seen it. Somebody compare it to I forget what
it looks like. Looks like an Imperial Star Cruiser from Star Wars.
So goddamn tacky.
In fact, he should be worried that Lucasfilm's going to sue him for his house.
Well, that could be another parallel to Jenny McCaskey, where didn't George Lucas, he wanted to build his museum in that south parking lot of Soldier Field?
Yeah. She put the kibosh on that.
You can just move into Mark Davis's home.
Yep.
Yeah, the Star Wars.
I forget what Mark Davis's thing was with the fan. I think it was the Raiders last year. He would not allow them to have fans in their new Roomba Dome, the Allegiant Dome, or whatever it's called. until they could have 100% capacity. He basically said, either all our fans can come, or we're going to wait until all Raider fans can come to this dome, which is, you know, was not a terrible idea. He didn't want a third full stadium. He wasn't going to, they weren't going to sell a ticket till every seat could be filled.
That's fair.
And the Bears are going to get to see that in all its glory on
Sunday. Yeah, I have not. We're going to see that on Sunday then. I haven't really even gotten a look at that stadium, so.
And as Mike Pusateri pointed out, I think it was him, right? So last week the Chargers played the Raiders at SoFi, and there were more Raider fans than Charger fans. And so he said the Raiders are the home team in playing the Chargers this week, and they'll be the road team at home next week against the Bears.
There will
be more Bear fans there, because that's, you know, one of the great things about having a team in Vegas is that it's a destination for every other fan base. You get to go hang out in Vegas for a few days and go see your team play. So
yeah, there are going to be a lot of Bears fans there. You're right.
So probably another reason why they couldn't start Andy Dalton, because he would get booed off the field.
Even on the road, the quote-unquote road. Yeah, I'm almost sad for Al Davis that he's not alive to see the Raiders play in Vegas. It's a perfect fit, really, just considering their history, their brand. It's perfect that they're a Las Vegas team, man.
Yeah, I don't know that he ever tried to move them there, but it seems like an Al thing to do. Of course, when he was still alive, the NFL would not have even deigned to consider having a team in Vegas.
Whether he had suggested it or not.
And especially if Al had suggested it. There's no way.
They wouldn't do it under anybody. If Wellington Mara wanted to move to Vegas, they wouldn't have let him do it.
And they only ended up in Vegas because they screwed Mark Davis out of the originally he was supposed to be the other tenant in SoFi with the Rams. The Chargers were going to stay in San Diego. And the Raiders were going to move in. And they engineered this whole thing because they were trying to, you know, the Spanos hadn't been able to build a stadium in San Diego and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And a kind of a last-minute switcheroo.
They got the St. Louis Rams to come out? Is that what you're saying?
Well, the Rams were always coming. It was Stan Kroenke was always the one building the stadium. They wanted a second team, and it was going to be the Raiders. And then it wasn't. And he was like, I can't stay in Oakland. So he basically at the end, they got him to agree that he could move to Vegas. So now they're in Vegas.
Well, probably where they belong.
Yeah. So it's an odd history between the Bears and Raiders.
It is.
A lot of it is that they just haven't been good at the same time.
Yeah, except for 84, 90. Yeah, you're right. They haven't. Oddly enough, 2 years ago they were, but even then, I mean, they've never been great outside of the 84 game. That's really the only time that those were two teams that were sort of at the top.
Yeah.
The Raiders were coming off a Super Bowl championship. The Bears were a year away, and other than that, they're just two ships passing in the night.
And even at that, they played one of the ugliest games in NFL history.
That's awesome. I'm going to read that Deadspin article again. I love it. I'm going to watch that game. The full 3-hour thing is on YouTube. So if you can stomach it, it's almost like a Quentin Tarantino movie. Check it out. You'll see some real brutality. It's awesome.
So next week is Bears Packers.
Oh, again?
Is that right?
All right.
Yeah, Bears Packers. All right. And it's a noon game. That's a rarity in this. We always get stuck at the stupid.
Yeah, usually it's prime time and shit.
I think the one in Green Bay is a Sunday night game.
Yeah, it harkens back to the 80s, and they're always at noon. Okay.
Should be a law. Bears Packers play at noon.
Is it also a law that we roll Tim Ryan and Johnny Morris out of mothballs to broadcast it, maybe?
They're both still alive, right?
Johnny Morris is. You don't hear from him, but...
I think Tim Ryan's still alive. If not, we'll get the other Tim Ryan, the one who used to play lineman for the Bears.
The one who talks like this all the time. It'd be great to have 3 hours of that.
The one who, like, Jim Flanagan and Tink Johnson had the nerve to wear number 99. Yeah. Some people just lack self-awareness. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a problem when you retired numbers like a drunken sailor in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, you know, I saw a number 50 blitzing from the outside. I don't think anyone had worn 50 since Singletary.
Oh, no. That's been handed around.
Has it?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I just haven't been paying attention. I noticed it and it struck me as odd. Tim Ryan, by the way, still alive. And I didn't know he's a retired Canadian-born American.
Still doing luge somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, we've got some surprises in store the rest of the season, and I've talked about it. There's a Bears-Vikings game that hopefully we can get into in December. But it's not Tim Ryan. Never mind. But I have a feeling Tim Ryan's name has not been mentioned for the last time this year.
Okay, so since Mike Singletary retired, 5 Bears have worn number 50.
Okay.
Most prominently, of course, is a guy who also wore 50 and 99. Right?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Shane McClellan?
He got all
the Hall of Famers numbers.
I said McClellan needed to wear number 95 so he can shit on all of the Hall of Fame defensive players from the 85.
Nobody
Bears.
Wore it for 11 years, and then James Anderson wore it for
McClellan
a year.
Okay.
James Anderson, James I think, Anderson. Most famous for, he was the guy who didn't pick up the fumble against
in
the Packers
game. Yep.
He ran right by the ball. Motherfucker.
I did not recall that he wore 50, but you're right.
So it was James Anderson, Shea McClellan, Jarrell Freeman wore it for a year.
No.
Jeremiah Atochu. I can't say his name. He wears it now. And of course, the best, the most famous one, and I'm sure if you go to his holding cell, wherever he is, Barkevious Mingo wore it last year.
And Mingo!
As we said earlier in this one of these podcasts, or maybe it was on the Bear podcast, but if you want to know what Barkevious did, Google it, but don't Google it from your work computer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't remember that.
It's ugly. Oh, it just happened in the offseason. He had signed with another team, and I had to go to jail instead.
Charges against former Bear, blah, blah, blah. Ooh, hey, yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I do recall he wore number 50. Now, Mingo, that name was popping in my head, so.
Yeah. So
somehow I successfully suppressed his
And I think
charges.
That when the Bears moved to the Victory Auto Record Field in Arlington Heights.
Yes.
They need to figure out what we're going to do with all these numbers. I think what they should do is actually create in the new stadium a Ring of Honor.
Yep.
And put everybody up in there that they've either retired their number or had retired number-like ceremonies, like Singletary. Did they get permission to retire Urlachers, or can't they? I don't think they can. They have retired way too many numbers.
They have to get permission. They had to get permission. Peyton was a no-brainer. Nobody's going to stop him there. And I don't even know if they officially retired it. Nobody's going to dare to wear
it. Was Ditka, right? They had to get permission for Ditka?
For Ditka and then also for Stairs and Buckets.
Okay. So they even started then.
Yes. So going back to before 94. Yeah.
But they need to put those people up where people can actually see it. And then, honestly, you could probably unretire some of those numbers.
Yeah.
And just
have
the all-time, you know, like nobody's ever going to wear 34 again. Nobody's ever going to wear 51 again.
Or 7 for Bob Avellini and George Halas.
Right.
Yeah, but like, come on. Is anyone going to get brokenhearted if you know, does Bulldog Turner have descendants that are going to raise a stake if number 66 comes back?
66. Red George Grange. McAfee's, does anybody remember that Red Grange wore 77?
77?
No.
Yeah. George McAfee, number 5. I mean, some borderline questionable.
So I don't know I don't know where we would set the bar, but it's certainly. Obviously, it's Peyton. He's the greatest Bear of all time. So it's Peyton. I would say
Luckman's
42.
Sure. Yeah, Buckus.
Luckman's 42. Sid, because he was the only. We clung to him forever. Until we retire number one, Sid is the only quarterback number that gets retired. We're retiring for Jeff George, not for Justin.
I don't think they should unretire number 3 for Nagurski.
Right. And I was going to say, Nagurski's so iconic.
Yeah.
And came back, and then he won many titles for them.
You can make an argument. Red Grange was not that great of a Chicago Bear. He was a great college player.
Great college player, and then whatever the barnstorming shit he did.
Yeah, and that's fine. But if anything, if he was noted for anything as an NFL player during NFL seasons, it was as a defensive player. You know, he made a big tackle in the 1933 championship game, but he was not, you know, a great NFL running back in non-barnstorming games. So, you
got to loosen up some of the numbers so you can go back and retire. You know, you can retire. Like, you know, you need to honor
Urlacher.
Well, I was thinking like Maury Buford,
Hampton. Yeah, thank you.
Go back and retire, good old number 8.
No, I would say Hampton, Urlacher, Singletary. Yeah, I'm not sure who else. We haven't had that many great players, but you're right. There are some of those that no one's going to shed.
I mean the Bears have had a lot of great players, but the maybe more than their share. Although I guess they're an original franchise, 102 years. You're going to have a lot.
I mean, in the last 30 years, though, I'm saying. You know, Urlacher.
Yeah.
Hampton, Singletary.
Right. You can even go to, like, the Super Bowl era.
Yep.
You know, it's.
Well, it's.
Because that's post Butkus and Sayers.
Yes.
So. Yep. Is it? No, it's not.
Well, I mean. They were retired in 94, but they had to get permission, like you said.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, most of the guys we really think of, they've had their share, I guess, in the last 50 years.
Maybe Hester. Why not? The Cubs have retired that number. The Bulls have retired that number.
I think Lori Lightfoot should just retire that number citywide. And then when the Bears move to Arlington, they can unretire it. That'll be her answer.
Yes. Yes. She'll get the 2006 Bears lobby in her corner.
So, yeah. So we'll figure out what we're going to do for the Packers next week.
Yep.
Because they fall into that category of a team we didn't just do last year. We did them twice.
Yes, we did.
But, yeah. So they'll be, at the very least, you're going to get some of those highlights. Because those were two pretty good podcasts.
Yeah. There's some good stuff we unearthed.
And then we can always, one of the two games, we can break out something special for.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to it.
All right.
All righty. Well, thanks, Andy. Sounds good.
Many of us have herpes.